Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hello, and thank you for joining us on a very special edition of Beyond the Darkness. Friday morning, I was woken to the news that Lorraine Warren had passed away. So I contacted Tim, and we decided the best way to honor Lorraine would be in playing her final interview that we did together back in July of, I believe it was 2013. And Tim, as we look back at the 13 years that we've been doing Paranormal Talk Radio, I remember how excited we both were when we landed Lorraine Warren. I think it was in our very first year.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And the interview took a totally different form. That first interview really kind of was an interesting take on her life and work with Ed. And the paranormal kind of came secondary. Mm-hmm. And it was such a charming, loving interview. And unfortunately, I don't think it plays at all on the interview, but the moment was that Ed was still alive, but in a coma, right, and he was being taken care of at home.
Right.
And there were a few times during commercial breaks, she would have to go check on Ed and rub his head or give him a kiss, she said, on the forehead. And it was just, she was so sweet. And hearing her stories, and she was a good friend to our radio show over the years, making multiple visits with us. And when the Conjuring movie was coming out, we were lucky enough to interview the actress, Lily Taylor, who played Mrs. Perrin in the movie, and then talked to Lorraine about the case and some of her other cases that she worked on. And that was our final interview. Can you believe it's already been 6 years since our final interview?
Yeah, time flies so quickly. It really does.
Way too quickly. I was lucky enough in 2005, I believe it was, to meet Lorraine Warren at UNIVCon at Penn State University. And she was such a charming, sweet, sweet woman. And I don't say these things just because she's passed away. I was enamored with Lorraine from the minute we met. And I mean that in a respectful way. She was such a sweetheart. So kind to everyone that came up to meet her, take a photograph with her. And that's when I introduced myself. When I followed back up with her to try to get an interview for our very first interview, she remembered me, or at least was polite enough to say she remembered me. And we had a great radio relationship with Lorraine over the years. So it's a sad day. Now, yesterday, of course, Supernatural News, we recorded on Thursday, so we did not know about the passing of Lorraine Warren at that point. That's why there was no mention in yesterday's episode. But when we heard about the passing, we wanted to do something, and again, we thought in honoring her with her final interview on our program, we could replay that for many of you that didn't get a chance to hear this 6 years ago. So please sit back and enjoy our final interview with Lorraine Warren.
Good evening and welcome. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Across the board from me, Mr. Tim Dennis. Good evening, Tim.
Good evening.
Man, we got a great show lined up tonight.
Yes, indeed.
This is exciting. We had a chance last night to go see the premiere of the new movie, The Conjuring, which opens up nationwide tomorrow, Friday night. You guys get a chance to go out and see it. Then joining us later on in the show, we're going to have actress Lily Taylor, who's going to come up. She plays the mother from the movie, Carolyn Perrone. And then later on, we're going to be joined by the one and only Lorraine Warren for the remainder of the show this evening to talk about the real case, to talk about her history in demonology, ghost hunting, and what brought her to that case. But let's get started, Tim. Before there was Amityville, there was Harrisville. Based on the true story, The Conjuring tells the tale of how world-renowned paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren were called upon to help a family terrorized by a dark presence in a secluded farmhouse. Now, from New Line Cinema, this movie opens up tomorrow. worldwide. You're going to be able to check it out in the theaters. Looks absolutely terrifying. If you've seen the ads for it, you heard what Tim and I thought of the movie. I loved it. This is a great flick. It's out right now. Joining us on the phone this evening, we are talking to one of the stars from the movie, and she is Lily Taylor. She actually plays Carolyn Perrone, the mother of the family that was actually afflicted with this. Welcome to the show, and thank you for being here with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is an intriguing deal. You know, one of the first times I've ever seen in a movie trailer that they actually inject scenes of the real family talking about the encounters and then doing the paranormal scenes from the movie. Was there any interaction between you and the actual family while you were putting the show together and doing the movie?
Well, during the filming, the family came to visit, and the day that they were coming, the woman that I'm based on fell down and broke her hip.
Oh.
Which was really intense, and I kind of wanted to keep a little distance with the daughters who are now grown up, because mm-hmm. I was like in a little bit of a possessive state. I was not, I was like bad, and I just didn't want to mess with them more than they had already been messed with.
Right.
So I just kept my distance, and then I met them at the premiere the other night, and I said I didn't want to come up to you, and I was in possession mode.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they've lived through it once. They don't need to see somebody well acting it again.
So I
was blown away looking through. I mean, I recognized you immediately, of course. And just looking back through the deal, you were in a couple of my favorite movies, The Haunting and The Secret with Duchovny. Those are some really great movies. You've also been in X-Files, 6 Feet Under, and you're in the new Netflix series, Hemlock Grove. So
that's right.
You seem to have a predilection for getting involved in the paranormal phenomena movies and television series. Is there anything particularly that draws it to you, or is it just the paycheck and that's what draws you to the business?
No, not at all. No, for me, it's all about the collaborative experience. I mean, obviously, I need money, but, but really, it's about the creative thing. And, you know, I'm actually about to start a J.J. Abrams thing, a sci-fi thing. So what I'm really kind of liking about what's happening with the genre stuff is that, and it's funny enough, I'm finding that these creators are able to kind of push beyond the genre in a way. Like, it's sort of like, you know, they say it's like a discipline can actually free you up. I feel almost the constraints of the genre can sort of push the director into this interesting place. And all these things have been just, first of all, not like quote-unquote genre. Like, they've all been interesting. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think all this genre stuff is like, it's like kind of, that's where it's at right now, because you're finding you can have still human stuff happening within this wild context, you know?
No doubt about it. And when you're in these movies and doing these roles, I mean, you're talking about the scene in The Conjuring where you were kind of in possession mode and this was going on. Is that, there's method acting. There's people that will, go out and work in an Arby's to see what it's like to work in an Arby's. There's people that'll go work as a bartender to see what it's like to be a bartender. How do you prepare to become a possessed person for a movie and have to deal with that type of, I mean, that's some heavy duty stuff you got to put through.
It is. Well, I'll tell you, it's like the internet's, a great place in some ways if you know how to use it.
Right.
And, YouTube has like, you just search exorcism and there's stuff that's going to come up. Which for me was very, very helpful and instrumental. Like, whereas maybe 10 years ago, I would try to go into a psych ward or something, and they're not going to let you in and watch people, So, that's like, I have a whole, like, new world that's opened up. And then I learned through watching these exorcism tapes that all of the subjects were screaming in a way that was very unique and, I realized I was going to have to learn how to scream. So then I searched how to scream. Of course, all this stuff comes up on YouTube. And then I learned how to scream. And then, everything is just, it's like a great resource. So that was the big linchpin right there.
Well, looking at the different type of movies and series that you've been a part of course, you get to act a role that isn't based on a real person. Is there a big difference when you have to step in and you've got to do honor to the real person, but you also have to Hollywoodize this because there's got to be some more drama to it and there's got to be some, effect to what you're doing. Is it hard to balance between delivering the goods for the family to make sure they feel like their story is being told and delivering the Hollywood goods?
I don't feel that responsibility towards the family. I feel once the person signs the rights away, but then we get to do what we need to do. And it's different when the subject's well known. That's a different, you have almost a cultural responsibility in a way.
Right.
But in this case, it's like, I feel like I did not, we had to make the story come alive, you know, how we did, as you said, Hollywoodize it. I sort of see it as like, I've done adaptations where we were faithful to the original and it had no life in it. So what if you're faithful, but there's no energy, then who cares? You know what I mean?
Right, no doubt.
So I'm kind of like, I give myself that permission to, and I, in fact, when I've played real people, I've let them know, listen, I've got to have my own Anne, whatever your name is, you know, I have to have my own ex. It's going to be not you completely. It's going to be me plus you equals whoever comes out of that, you know?
Oh, great. And do the families or the people that you represent when you do these real films, are they pretty accepting of understanding that as well?
Some are, some aren't. But that's the thing, is if you've signed your stuff away, then
right,
that's tough noogies. You could go to court, you know?
No doubt. Yeah, well, and the reason I ask is, especially in cases like this, you know, I mean, it's certainly, this is such a strange case, and in some cases, people feel very tortured, and I mean, what they had to deal with was very frightening to the family in reality. And, you know, I know there was a movie that came out last year, I can't remember the title of it, but it was a remake of a TV documentary horror movie, and the family was portrayed so far off scale from the original family. The family was left really traumatized because they felt like, yeah, we gave rights, but we had no idea they were going to turn our entire family into something different.
Oh, was that documentary about that? I think I know what you're talking about. That's tough. But that, you know, it's different. I mean, I guess it all depends, but I guess it really depends on what agreement the creators and the subjects have come up with. And if you've made an agreement that you're going to stay truthful to their story, then you obviously have to honor that. I would not want to personally make that pledge to somebody because I don't know if I could be true to that because things change.
Right.
When you're making a movie, things change.
Sure.
It's like, yeah. And so I wouldn't want to be beholden to anybody. So I would say then I can't do what you need done. And so I shouldn't do your story.
When you're in the middle of doing a dramatic part like that and you're doing the possession scene or you're doing a scene where you're so hyped up from the energy of facing this fear and doing this, is that ever hard for you as an actress to shake off or as an actor to just walk away from afterwards? Or does it kind of play on you? You're doing all these scenes about a horror story that actually took place. Do you go home that night kind of looking over your shoulder and wondering if you're bringing this to you?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, the thing is there's going to be a bleed over, and it's almost unrealistic not to expect it. Or I mean, it's unrealistic to think that there's not going to be. I remember I did this scene where the character was attempting suicide. We did the scene all day, and then I got home, and I just wasn't feeling well. I talked to a friend. I said, I'm just a little blue, and, you know, she said, well, what was you to do today? I said, I just did this scene where I attempted suicide all day. And it's like, how can that not? It's like almost like a placebo. You know, placebos
right.
are so powerful.
Right.
It's almost like a reverse placebo. It's like, how can, if I'm doing that, how can it not? So the real thing task comes to what can I do to sort of allow for more room for some uncomfortable feelings or something like that and make space for it, you know?
No doubt. And I'd like to know too, as you're doing a movie like this, is there, you know, a lot of the people that have lived the story, you know, well, Lorraine Warren, the actual investigator, is going to be on with us in the next hour and a half of the show to share her experiences behind the real tale and talk about some of her life dealing with this. And she has told me in the past when she's done things like this, kind of revisiting, she almost gets worried about reopening that paranormal wound, if you will, and having something reattached. Do you have, as an actress, do you have any belief system in the paranormal that it, you know, boy, if I do this story and we do it right, am I kind of inviting this into my own world now, or do you kind of look at the supernatural as, you know, fantasy and playland?
Well, I think I would be coming more from just like a psychic place, like psychic, not psychic EST, but just like the psyche, like, is that an area that I want to, is that an emotional place that I feel like dwelling in for this period of time in my life? I think it would be more like that as opposed to like forces outside of myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure.
I would be more kind of concerned about the forces within.
Oh, right. That you'd let that start getting the darkness inside of you, I guess.
Yeah.
Have you ever had experiences with the paranormal?
I did. I mean, and, you know, I was just talking about it earlier. I was in a house, funny enough, it was in Rhode Island, on Block Island. And, you know, there was, before going into that house, I kind of, you know, had fun listening to stories and so on, but I'd never had one firsthand. And, you know, it was sort of just classic stuff of just like, uncomfortable energy, lights going on and off, really, really, really loud, scary noises, things like that. But if you were to say to me what was going on, what was in that house, I would still say, I don't know. I really don't know. And I don't really feel a pressure to answer it. And that's where I am. So I guess I'd say I'm agnostic.
Okay. So it may be there, but as long as you're not giving it the energy, it can stay out of your way and you can stay out of its, right?
Well, on the other hand, I did not want to be in that. I mean, I was definitely doing some foxhole praying, and I was definitely like, listen, I want out. I am going. I do not mean any harm, and I want out. I always wanted a ghost experience, and after that, I have no desire. I have no desire to deal with anything like that ever again.
Well, I don't blame you, especially after you've done a role like this. I mean, just doing the movie The Haunting, you know, that was a great kind of reimagining or remake, and that was still a chilling movie. And I love the fact in that movie, it was not so much about what you saw, it was about what you perceived to be there and the dark. And
totally.
That's a lot creepier to me sometimes than seeing the spider crawl down the stairs, you know, or the head spinning on the shoulders, kind of freaky exorcist looking stuff. Now, you had mentioned earlier something real quickly about J.J. Abrams. Is that the Almost Human TV series that you're working on?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Now, has that been picked up yet? Is it still just in pilot stage?
No, it's picked up. And so we're going to start, you know, I guess a couple of days, and it'll air November.
Excellent. Very cool.
Yeah.
Boy, you got to be happy to be attached to anything with J.J.'s name attached to it at this point, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's not a bad way to go. So that's going to be coming out in November. And for our listeners that are interested, Keith Urban from the Star Trek series is also, I'm sorry, Carl Urban. I keep wanting to say Keith because of the country guy.
I know, me too.
Carl Urban is also attached. In a not-so-distant future, human cops and androids partner up to protect and serve as the little liner on the Almost Human page on IMDb. And when I saw that, I lit up. I'm like, all right, cool, a new series coming out. But I didn't see JJ's name attached to it when I glanced at it the first time. Well, you've got the movie is breaking out tomorrow nationwide. Go check it out. It's July 19th in nationwide theaters, The Conjuring. And, you know, I hope you have a great time. I hope you had a great time with the movie, and I hope it's very successful for you. And thank you for spending some time here in the darkness on the edge of town.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you, Miss Taylor. Okay, guys, stay tuned. Right. We're going to be back. We've got more Darkness Radio right after this. Good evening. Welcome back to the show. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. Darkness Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. That guy over there, that's Tim Dennis. And Tim, did you know this?
No, I didn't.
I didn't think so. Before there was Amityville, there was Harrisville. Based on a true story, the new movie The Conjuring tells the horrifying tale of how world-renowned paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren were called upon to help a family terrorized by a dark presence in a secluded farmhouse. Forced to confront a powerful demonic entity, the Warrens find themselves caught in the most terrifying case of their lives. The Conjuring opens up in theaters tomorrow, July 19th. You can find more information at theconjuring-movie.com. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us this evening for the remainder of the show, legendary paranormal investigator Lorraine Warren. Good evening, Lorraine. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, this is intriguing. How many cases that you've worked on have actually been made into movies? I know there's at least a couple that I can think of.
Yeah, there's a couple. Yes. And there's some that they use bits and parts from. You know,
right, from your actual investigations and talk about them in those movies.
Yes.
This has been quite a road. I mean, you and your husband, Ed, were dedicated to helping families in need, helping people that were being oppressed and possessed and dealing with the darkest forces on the planet. And I know you've been a great friend to our show for the last 8 years and have spent many times with us. But just to kind of recap for some of our newer listeners and people that maybe don't know about you and your husband, in what year did you two begin your journey into helping with paranormal investigating and helping bring help and answers to the public?
I'll be giving away my age.
Well, you were four when you started, right?
yes, somewhere in the late 40s, early 50s. And I can remember the conversations that we would have. It was, you know, I can go back to that. And I, for some reason, I mean, I was educated in private Catholic girls' schools, but something began happening to me that I wasn't able to share with the nuns, and I certainly wasn't able to share them with my parents, and that is when I began to see lights around people. And I didn't really understand it. I wasn't afraid, though. I was never afraid of it. I would pray to God and say, if it's not of you, God, then please take it away. And I didn't really know what was happening. And then one day, a Mother Superior, I said, you know what? Your lights are brighter than Mother Superior's lights. Oh, well, I paid a price for that. And that's how it went on like that for a very, very long time. Then when I realized my husband, Ed, he did not understand that.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't really understand what I was saying or talking about. Then we were in a home in Henniker, New Hampshire, and that house was haunted. There was an elderly man who lived in that house. And I walked up to the door. Ed stayed in the car. He said, you got a lot of guts. Well, I don't have a lot of guts, but I'm interested. And that home was so old, high up on a hill. And we had another couple with us. So I went up to the door, and he said, well, come right in. Do you have anybody with you? Yes, I said, my husband and a couple that came with us. And, well, come right in. And so he ushered us in to this little room. The place was only heated by fireplaces. So the only fireplace that was on was in this little tiny room. So we went in there, and Ed began asking this man a lot of questions. He was a very smart man, very old man, but very smart. And after a while, I had my arms crossed in front of me on the back of Ed's chair, and all of a sudden, I felt a terrible jolt to my body. This was the first, and I was out of my body, and I looked down and could see myself, and I could tell that it really badly, badly frightened my husband, Ed, and he picked me up, and he took me on to the front porch of this ancient house, and I think it started then, but
so you actually, was it, had you had a medical issue? Was there a...
No, there was no medical issue.
It was just your soul just left your body at that moment.
Yes, it did.
Wow.
I had no medical issues whatsoever. I was in very, very good health. I was being educated in private Catholic girls' schools at a time when that was very, very difficult on my parents, you know, because it was depression time.
Right.
And so that'll give my age away. And so as it went on, I could tell that Ed really wasn't comfortable with it. He really wasn't comfortable with it at all. So we were lecturing in a school in someplace down south.
Well, let me ask one thing real quickly, Lorraine. I mean, once he brought you outside, how quickly was your soul ingratiated back into your body? Were you brought back instantly when he got you outside of the home?
It's like getting, if you know how when you have work done on your teeth and the doctor gives you so much stuff, whatever you have to have,
right.
You know, well, it's like that. It's a gradual thing.
Okay, so you could just feel yourself coming back into the conscious state.
That scared him because he knew who I was.
Right.
You know, my husband. And it was always very, very difficult for me. So I knew something about Dr. Thelma Moss. And then she was going to be lecturing in a place, and I wanted to go there and hear her. And I did. I wanted to see if she was real, you know, and sincere, or just a scientist. So I said to Ed, honey, you know what I want to do, and I hope you're going to help me. I want to go see Dr. Thelma Moss and Dr. Johnson, who work together. And he said, would that help you? I said, I don't think I need the help, honey, but I think you do. And so with that, I went, and I came out higher than average of anybody they ever tested. And she wanted to give me all these papers, you know, to prove it. I said, I don't need to prove it. I know who I am.
So you were proving higher in these numbers for like a psychic ability,
yes,
than anybody else had tested for them.
Yes.
And Ed, he was reluctant still at this point. It was not part of his lexicon, this whole supernatural realm. Is that right?
No, that is right. It was very, very difficult.
So
it's very difficult for people. It was difficult for me because of myself, you know, my parents.
Right.
I mean, Irish Catholic parents, come on.
Right.
I mean, you know, isn't anything like that talked about in my house. And then being educated in private Catholic girls' schools, you know, so it was very hard. It wasn't easy, honey.
When did Ed start to open up to this, to realize that he also had a calling to assist in and become part of the paranormal world?
Boy, it was a long time, honey.
Really? So there always thinks Ed was kind of the leader of this deal, but you were actually the introduction into the supernatural for him then.
Yes, we were back in Connecticut again,
mm-hmm.
And there was this judge who had passed away, and his wife called Ed and I and said, I'm frightened of my husband. He passed away, but his spirit, I think, is still here. So we went up to this house, and it was a house that must have been built like in the 30s, and it had an attached garage, but you could go from the garage right into the kitchen. Do you remember houses that were...
Right.
Built like that.
Right.
Well, that's how this one was built. And I was sitting there at the table, and Ed was interviewing interviewing this woman regarding her experiences. And with that, I said, excuse me. And Ed looked around, and I said, who is that man that's abusing you? And Ed said, what are you talking about, Lorraine? I said, who is the man that's abusing you? And she began to cry. And a neighbor woman was there. It was her son-in-law that was abusing her. And that's how it gradually moved into his understanding.
And then you became this unbelievable team that you worked on literally thousands of cases throughout your career together working on this. Ed and Lorraine Warren, two of the most well-known and well-respected names in paranormal investigative field. Lorraine, have you had a chance to actually see the movie yet?
Yes.
And
yes, my son-in-law and I seen it probably about three or four. We're going back and forth all the time. I'm going back today after tomorrow. I'm going back again.
Oh, great. So you get a chance to get out there and see this quite a bit. Now, were you happy with the way that they conveyed it? And I understand that there's always Hollywood.
There's always license.
Right,
yes.
Right.
Yes, there is, but I think they did really, a really neat job. I really do. I mean, I didn't fall through any holes in the floor. I didn't do that, you know.
Sure.
But
they have to build up a little bit of tension. So there's, but the majority of the storyline they got right. Is it hard for you? I know you and Ed were so incredibly close, and we're up to till the end. Is it strange for you to sit there in a theater and watch it played out in front of you again and see Ed brought back to life for this story and that type of memory and dealing in that case?
Yeah, it is, honey. Yes, I can say yes to that.
Is it?
Yes, I can say yes to it, because when you lose someone so very close to you, it's terrible. And then yesterday, I lost a pet.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. When you are doing this, though, is it also kind of, I mean, even though you're looking at this dark case, this horrific tale, you get to see you and Ed again together doing this. Is it kind of an excitement, kind of a neat experience for you to see this again through new eyes?
It really is. Yes. It went, sitting, watching it, you know, I was doing that with my son-in-law. Now, that was a while ago, mm-hmm. you know, when everything was just getting made. And, it was fantastic, honey. It was. I think they did a fantastic job.
Well, it was interesting because it when I've seen the scenes from the movie, when they were first running the trailers and they showed, and I can never pronounce her name properly, Vera Farmiglia. She was. There are some of the scenes where I've seen pictures of you from back then, and boy, she has got your look and actions down dead on.
Isn't that beautiful?
It is. It's really amazing to see her do that. I mean, that's got to be weird to see yourself portrayed in a movie and see somebody acting so well and grasping your look, your attitude, and everything. I can't even imagine what that'd be like to sit there and watch that play back out in front of you. I mean, that's just got to be a kind of a thrill in a weird way.
Well, a few months ago, we were doing it, and it was, she was on the stage, and it was being done in a university that we had the whole university to ourselves for this 2-day thing. And I thought, wow, oh my God. and I watched how she carried herself and everything.
Did she get to spend much time with you to kind of get into character, to understand who you were and what drove you for this, or did they?
She even came here. She even came to my home.
Oh, really?
Her oh God, isn't that awful? His name I'm forgetting. God!
Oh, the gentleman that plays Ed.
Yes.
In the movie, and I'm pulling it up here again because, like you, my mind is failing me on the name right now.
I must be fired.
Which is horrible because great actor, and both of us are blanking on this.
Both of them are fantastic.
Right, and it's Patrick Wilson. That's it. Patrick Wilson. Yeah, plays the role of Ed Warren.
What great people. And being out there in San Francisco, we had replays and everything, and everybody was there, and it was great. We had a really good time. We were in San Francisco for 8 days, and now I'm going back. A day after tomorrow, I'm going back again, and that will be, you know, for the finale.
Sure. Now, when you were approached to tell this story again, knowing the darkness involved in it and knowing what was going on, is there any apprehension on your part to ever relive some of these cases and what you had to deal with?
Yes.
Is there apprehension just because it was so hard the first time, you don't know that you really want to go through it again, or afraid that you might open up doors you just don't want to have opened up again?
For me, like, for instance, if they wanted me to go back in that house again.
All right. Right.
I know what happened there. I know what I witnessed there. You know, it's all documented. Why would I have to go back there and go through that again?
Understandable. I mean, it's a terrifying case when you look at all that went into it in the movie. Fascinating movie, very creepy. I mean, it gets into your head with what this family had to go through. And, we're going to take a break in a few minutes again, and then we'll start, kind of going into how you were introduced to this family and to this case. And we had Andrea on the show a number of months ago talking about the case in her book, House of Darkness, House of Light, and sharing it. As a matter of fact, I think we replayed that back on July 3rd on the station here. So we've been talking about the case and, keeping it out there. And, I give you a lot of credit. I mean, it's not like you're taking it easy now, Lorraine. It's not like you've kicked back and you're just, eating bonbons, petting your cats and watching soap operas.
No, I'm not retired.
Right. You are still out in the field. You are still engaged in these kind of cases and helping bring answers to families.
My daughter and granddaughter, everybody else, shake their heads. Are you going to retire? No.
No. Well, no. I mean, if this is your calling, and certainly you're able to continue doing it and bring answers to people, you're living in an enlightened way that a lot of people just may not understand, but it's amazing the amount of help that you've brought to people. Has your family, anybody in the family, tried to follow in your footsteps, your immediate, kids, grandchildren, anything like that, if they wanted to get into the field?
No, not one. I mean, how Irish Catholic people are.
Right.
And it's just, I don't even know why it happened to me. I really, truthfully don't know why and how it all came about. But I have my faith. That is the one thing that I have that it protects me and allows me to do what I'm doing.
I'm going to ask you kind of a strange and possibly hard question here before we go into the next break. We've talked to many exorcists on the show through the years, and we've spoken with you, we've spoken with John Zaffis, we've spoken with Father Andrew Calder, so many people that are well-recognized in this field doing what you do, and the consensus has been that a lot of people that involve themselves in the darker side of investigations, their lifespans seem cut short. Because of the trauma that they're put through dealing with these type of cases, mm-hmm. Was that ever a concern for you? And how did you face continuing that?
He wants to take me, but not really. I think I have God's help in doing what I'm doing.
Right, and that's what keeps you strong in doing this. Do you think there's a difference between the exorcists who do this and you're assisting in the exorcisms? Or, maybe that's why there's so much more of a dramatic change in what's going on? Because, I mean, like I said, you are the Energizer Bunny. Every time I see you, you just keep moving, and you're great, smiling, you're a beam of light, whichever room you're in, and you're able to share stories and educate people. Plus, you're able to still bring help out to them. It's remarkable to see the gift that you've been given can continue in such a strong manner and not fall off. I mean,
why did it ever even start? When I look back, I was like 7 years old, and I didn't know who to talk to or anything. It was crazy. I started to write notes. I remember doing stuff like that.
And just kind of keeping track, almost like a diary of these experiences for yourself.
Yeah, to try to understand who am I.
Well, we've got online with us this evening The remarkable and wonderful Lorraine Warren, part of the investigative team, Ed and Lorraine Warren, paranormal investigators, and they work to help a family terrorized by a dark presence in their farmhouse. Forced to confront a powerful entity, the Warrens find themselves caught in the most terrifying case of their lives, and it is now the product of a major motion picture. It opens up tomorrow, July 19th. It's called The Conjuring. Go see it. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We've got more time with the lovely Lorraine Warren. Right after this.
Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, the luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell or trade in. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You already knew that was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet so you can plan ahead. Once you've finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer not available in all areas. If you like our show, you're going to love Offbeat with Ricky Anderson and Mir Harris on Podcast One. Join the head of A&R for the Kanye West-founded label, Good Music, and the music executive-turned-activist as they sit down for strange stories and offbeat conversations with some of the biggest names in music, comedy, entertainment, and more. Download new episodes of Offbeat with Ricky Anderson and Mir Harris every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Beyond the darkness.
Welcome back to the program. This is a very special replay. Our final interview with Lorraine Warren from back in July of 2013. We hope you enjoy it as much as we enjoy bringing it to you.
Good evening. Welcome back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. Darkness Radio is on the air. Tonight, a fascinating show, an amazing guest back with us. I was thinking, Tim, I think in 8 years we've been doing the show, we've had our guest with us at least six of those 8 years, at least once to stop by with us. Is that about right?
Yeah,
as we do the math?
Right. Yep.
Before there was Amityville, there was Harrisville. Based on a true story, The Conjuring tells the horrifying tale of how world-renowned paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren were called upon to help a family terrorized by a dark presence in a secluded farmhouse. Forced to confront a demonic, powerful entity, the Warrens find themselves caught in the most terrifying case of their lives. The Conjuring opens up tomorrow in theaters, July 19th. You don't want to miss this movie. For more information, you can check out theconjuring-movie.com. That's theconjuring-movie.com. And find more information, see the trailers. The trailers looked amazing all the way through this. So this is one of the few movies this year in the horror genre I was psyched to see, especially knowing that there is a real story behind this. And people forget, Lorraine, that these stories, this isn't just popcorn fodder. This isn't, The Blob. This isn't The Thing from Outer Space. This story, as terrifying as it is real. You had to live this case.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
And this was the Perrone family. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, Perrone.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's start in this hour. I want to cover this with you. Getting to know you and remind our newer listeners and some of our older listeners who you are, some of the stuff that you've done in the last hour of the show. And now in this hour, I really want to focus on this case with you. And walk me through, how did you first get involved in this case?
We were called by a woman who had six children. Her husband worked in New York City. She had been a model for him. And the six kids came along.
Okay.
And that kept her homebound. And we were called by that family and went up, and we interviewed neighbors and all regarding the family. And
no, so you're talking to neighbors. What was that? Just to vet them out and make sure that, you know, you weren't walking into a hornet's nest yourself of maybe not paranormal activity, but just a crazy family?
Yes, exactly.
And how did the neighbors respond? Did they understand what you were there exploring and trying to understand?
I tried to help them to understand it. And then there was a young college kid that he knew about it. He knew all about it. And he had approached us, him and his twin brother, and they were at a lecture that we were giving at that time. And they came up after the lecture to tell us about that family.
And you get called in, you're interviewing the neighbors, trying to get an understanding of the family that you're going into to deal with. And as you're interviewing the neighbors, was this phenomena spreading at all? Was it in any of the other homes in and around the area, or was it still just confined?
No, it was definitely not to our knowledge, it wasn't.
Okay.
And but it was a bad case to go into. It was a really bad case to go into. I can tell you about the first time that we had gone there. I think it was this is going to be the second time, but I want to explain the second time to you.
Okay.
This professor from New Haven wanted to go in on a case with us. So Ed picked him up, and we went up there. So when we went up, he walked downstairs. Ed and this professor walked down into the basement. It was a dirt floor, you know, with the kind of doors, you know, that you have to pull open,
right?
You know, the old cellar doors,
right?
And I went down, and Ed, with his hand, goes upstairs. So I didn't know what he meant, but I didn't know why he was doing it, so I went upstairs. And when I went upstairs, I got to the top of the stair, and there was this one room, and it was dark in that room. Although it was daylight, it was dark in that room. And there was a grotesque-looking thing right in the corner of that room.
And it was physically, you could physically see this.
See it. And I blessed myself. And when I blessed myself, it was like a hissing sound, like that kind of sound. And then I walked in to where it was like a little sitting room. And I walked into there, and I went and I sat on the bed in the master bedroom, and next to the mother. And when I did, the bed went up in the air with us. And this is daytime, and it was, I can't even tell you how terrified those children were that were in that. Six children. Were in there, and six girls, and the things that were happening were really, really, really crazy. It was terrible. That was a bad, bad house.
When you saw this thing, had you ever encountered anything that looked like that before?
They're always different. You can never say that everything is going to be identical in cases. But sometimes what Ed would say, does it resemble this? Does it resemble that? And I'd say, well, a little bit of this and a little bit of that, maybe. But that would irritate him if I said things like that. But that was the only way I had to explain it.
Sure. And when you see this, I mean, and it does it just put through a a terror through you to see something in a physical form as opposed to just sensing that something's in the room? Is it when you can see it physically, does that mean that this, what you're about to deal with, is much bigger and much more powerful than you were expecting to have to deal with?
Yes. And I sometimes, I you know, sometimes when these things happen, you know, I would like make the sign of the cross in the air, very small, so I wasn't seeming like a religious fanatic, and telling it, go away, go away, go back to where you came from. See, there's children there. You don't want to terrify the kids.
Right. Wow. I mean, that's a lot of juggling you have to do. Now, was the family at this point, were they scared for their lives, or did they not realize just how bad things were?
See, the thing was, at that time, there didn't seem to be any religion. See, we could have been bringing clergy in there, but there didn't seem to be any religion. And I felt bad for these people. I felt very, very bad. I mean, the father had a very good job in New York, and his wife was, you know, a model. You know, she was a beautiful woman. She was not, you should see how she looked. She looked just like Bathsheba Sherman.
Really?
Yes, she did. She wore all these long clothes, you know, dark clothes,
mm-hmm.
and these and thous and that kind of stuff. Yes?
All right. Now, going in and doing this, was... Now, Ed tried to usher you and save you from going down there and dealing with the things that you have to deal with. Did Ed start to... What's the word I want to pick up on? Did he start to develop his own psychic sense? Could he pick up on things before seeing it or confronting it and know that the darkness was there or that there was something definitely there?
What he would say to me, what is your take on this? And I'd say, tell him just exactly how I felt. And so we were a very good team. I mean, we never were arguing or fighting about this or that, you know. And he was a good-natured guy. He was a very good-natured guy. But we would discuss it, you know. And but my protection always was my face. That is the strongest thing you have going for you. Don't ever try to go in to do this kind of work and think you can do it on your own, because you can't.
And was Ed of a very strong faith as well when you began?
Yeah,
your...
we were both educated that way.
Okay, so there was that very big strength immediately. And
I don't think I could have married a man that wasn't like that, because that's how I was brought up.
Good point, yeah, and especially if this was your calling, it seems like you were drawn to have to do this. You were certainly paired with somebody that was strong and could help you co-anchor and deal with these things. So you brought in the family, you're going through this, and what were the claims initially of the family? What were they dealing with?
The kids, it was terrible. The shaking of beds.
Yeah, you when know. You said the bed lifted, was it just like it was being shaken, almost like the movie The Exorcist, or was it lifting the bed off the ground?
Yep, it lifted off the ground. I sat on it, and then I believe it was the mother. I'm almost positive it was the mother. And she sat on one part, and we went up.
And how long did you actually, I mean, was it just there long enough to, like, catch your attention and let you know, hey, we're here? Or did they lift you up and leave you up there for a few seconds to, you know?
No. Yeah, it was a few seconds. Yes, it wasn't minutes.
And when it brings you down, is it bringing you down in a violent fashion, or does it just lower it again like it did it slowly bringing you up? Did it lower
sometimes,
you?
Sometimes it would do it that way, and other times it would come down slow.
All right, so you're starting to see this. The beds are moving. There's these things that are going on. Are they hearing voices, screams, scratching? What's going on around?
There was scratching, a lot of scratching.
Now, physical scratching or sounds in the walls and things like?
like they were in the walls. That's why, like they were in the walls. That, just like that. They were just as if there were somebody in the walls. And I remember going, like, in the closets. There wasn't that many closets, because it was an old farmhouse. And to be sure that it wasn't rats or something, but it wasn't.
Right. And they were physically being touched and bothered by the spirit.
Yes, they were physically being touched and bothered.
Was this thing in the house when they first moved into it, or did this come after the family was already there?
See, we don't have that answer.
Okay.
There's, because we don't know. We only know this family, you know, and what this family witnessed and what we witnessed there. But I don't. I know there was tragedies.
Right.
I know there was a tragedy where a child was drowned on the property. So there were tragedies there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was this Bathsheba Sherman that was a witch.
Right.
And so, yes, there had to be some law of attraction. And that's probably how they got the house so cheap.
Well, see, that definitely, in the field of home buying, if you get a house that you think you're getting way too good a deal on, should people be a little unnerved by that before they move in, Lorraine?
They should.
Should they go? I mean, I'm saying it half tongue in cheek, but should they do some research on a house like that and go to the public library or Hall of Records mm-hmm. and pull up death records, see if there's anything attached to that house, or
yes.
maybe find out how fast people move in and out of that house?
Yeah, this house... I have designed, and this house was built for us. We built, when we came on this property,
right,
a long, long time ago, it was a tiny little cottage, a really tiny little cottage, two little bedrooms, and it was very small, and all the back property there was all overgrown, and like that, and it was an old maid school teacher that lived there. And we rented it. We rented it with the, you know, hope and the option of buying. And that's what we did.
So you made sure to take care of the place. You knew when you were going into it, it was going to be a safe environment for you.
Yes,
now,
definitely.
When you find a lot of these homes that are so amped up, like Amityville or Harrisville, do you find that there is there usually records where you see people moving in and out quickly leading
yep.
up to this amped up case that you end up having to get called in on?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you sure do.
And when this is going on, that's usually an indicator, I'm guessing, for you guys that there's something dark and malevolent in this house. When you start to investigate and dig into what's going on with this family, do you have to, and I know as you're interviewing each member of the family, do you find that there's usually one person, like a, you know, they refer to some things as a poltergeist agent, that, you know, there's one person it seems to center around most. And in this Harrisville case, the Conjuring case, did you find that there was one person, or was it just really
no,
just wanted everybody?
See, the kids, the children were too small. They were little children. I bet they were maybe just months apart. They were adorable. And then what about the dog, you know, and the
right.
rabbit?
Do you think are they attracted to the younger people because there's it's an easier essence or an easier energy to leech off of? And
yeah,
they bring that energy.
They weren't baptized.
Oh, okay, right.
There was, you know, they hadn't been baptized yet.
So there wasn't this shield of protection, at least in the religious dogma of the idea. So they were just kind of unshielded, and that's why you think it was easier for these spirits and forces, the demonic, to come after them.
That is our protection. That is my protection still right now, is my faith and going in. I mean, how come my 120 pounds? Hey, they could throw that right out the window. They could throw me right out the window. But when you have your faith going for you, That is your protection.
When
you never know. You never know what is going to happen in these places.
Now, how do you begin differentiating between a really mad ghost, a really irritable, crabby, mean, nasty spirit of somebody who is here once and might just be doing these things to get people off their property? How do you figure between that and then that it's a demonic force? And in your opinion, is there a difference? Are those people that are staying around, do they become a demonic force because they refuse
to
leave?
No,
okay.
No. We can, you and I could not go into a house and just be mean. And no, if you have a faith in God, then that's your protection. But if it's demonic, it's you can't. It's almost impossible without. excuse me. Without having some type of blessing to get rid of it.
All right, so that's the way that usually you can tell. But so a blessing won't just help get rid of a ghost that's unruly?
Yes. Yes, it will.
Okay, but it takes a lot more work than just a quick blessing to get rid of a demonic.
No. No, you can't say in the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to leave. No.
Okay, and
definitely can't say that.
They've got a deeper root. Well, so many people believe that that is the case, that, you know, I mean, we've seen it in Hollywood, you know, the power of Christ compels you, you must leave,
and
the demon finally lets go and moves out because Jesus has that power. But you're saying it's not that simple to drag one of these things out of a home or from the person. Now, when the demonic force is that strong in the house, and it seems that it was house-bent, I mean, it was part of that property, and it was affecting the children, does it begin to infect or possess them at some point as well? Do they start acting weird?
It would like to do that.
Okay.
Yes, it would like to do that. And, you know, when we finally, they wanted to go and find another house. But then they found out that there was going to be some kind of a road was going to be built right there, and that they were putting or water. I always forget what was going to happen there, but the house was going to get torn down. It never's been torn down.
Really?
No.
And have you ever gone back or not? You know, necessarily to investigate it. But I mean, have you ever heard that anything else has continued there?
I talked to a lady. I talked to this woman who lives in the area of this house, and she said to me about things that she has experienced. But she's a woman of great faith, and she just called me just a few weeks ago. She had called me and talked to me about things that she could see, but she said, "But it goes away. It goes away when I tell it to in God's name."
Oh, that's good. So she's still. I mean, somebody's still kind of keeping tabs on what's going on there.
Yeah.
So
she is.
So it's not a guarantee. It's not a guarantee even when Ed and Lorraine Warren show up and go to work on this. It's not even a guarantee at that point that you're going to eventually break this thing out of there and get it to leave the house or the people alone.
And especially if there's no religion. That's the biggest thing. You know, you're dealing with the demonic.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get the demonic out? Through God. But if there's no godliness in the house, then how are you? That's the big problem.
And do you try to, without evangelizing, do you try to get the family to understand that they need some kind of theological background, no matter, Judaism or Christianity? Okay.
We do, especially where there's children. And, we're going to be doing that. We're going to be doing that.
And do you feel if they would have baptized their children once this activity started, do you think that that would have dampened the attack and started to give the demon a lower grasp on what was going on there?
Yes, I think so. Yes, I do. Because as far as I'm concerned, And I don't go out of my way to ask the question, do you know the people that are living in that house now? And then sometimes she'd say to me, oh, she waves to me when I'm going by. She waves to me. I said, well, how do you think everything is? Nobody says anything. So that sounds good to me.
Right. So you're at that point, you've got kind of an idea of what's going on with the people that are there and if there's any kind of negativity on what's happening still in the homes.
Exactly.
You know, the story, it says before there was Amityville, there was Harrisville, and that this is one of the most terrifying cases of your life. I mean, you've had thousands of cases that you and your husband have worked on through your career doing this. Does this still rank in one of the top most terrifying cases you've ever had to deal with?
Yes, we've been in some very bad cases in England and Scotland and in Japan. We've been in cases all over the place.
But this still ranks among one of the highest.
Yeah, that ranks pretty high.
And boy, so out of all the cases, out of all the cases that you deal with, how many are in like this major kind of activity? Is this a rarer case? Is it like one out of every 100 cases you go into that's this amped up, or is it more?
No, it's more than one in 100. No.
Well, I mean, I know that you deal with a lot of the dark forces. I just didn't know if getting into this level of how bad things were, you know.
Let me explain it this way.
Okay.
You can go into a house where there is darkness, you know, where there is evil.
Right.
And then you can say, you know, do you have a rabbi or do you have a priest that could come in and can be something can be done? Yes. All right. That's a plus. But if there's no faith, you don't.
Lorraine, when you go in and you face a demonic like this and you help to eradicate it or get it booted out of that location, does it go roaming and try to find another place to go? Or does it get sent to an unholy realm and stuck there for some time? And do you ever come across that same demonic entity again later in your career in a whole new place?
You do. Look what Amityville did. It followed us right back home. It was terrifying.
Really? So these entities will, even though you're protected pretty well, and you and Ed have this faith, the dark will continue to try to, I guess, they're going to try to scare you, break you, and keep you from trying to do the work of the light and bring help.
They sure are.
But when you boot the spirit out of the house finally, or the not the spirit, but the demonic, do you, in your career later on, go to a new home and you find that it's the same beastie that's in the basement that you already dealt with before, and is it a lot easier for you to eradicate it once you've seen that one before?
Well, they act differently. They act differently in certain cases. And to say it's the same thing, I don't think so.
Well, James Wan is the director, writer, producer of this movie. He's also brought you Saw, Insidious, Dead Silence, Saw 3. Boy, if you're looking for Creep Factor, this is the guy to call in and get involved in the movie. The movie's out tomorrow nationwide. With the family going through this kind of a dark, demonic attack, when you get in there, do you ever try to separate out family members to have them leave the house to see if parts of the haunting will slow down?
You can do that. Yes, you can.
Okay, and then...
You can do that, and sometimes that does work. Not all the time, but sometimes it does.
Do you ever find in a family that calls you in, and you go in, and you're dealing with this kind of dark force, that as you're going through it and you're interviewing people, one of the least likeliest candidates, you end up finding out that they're actually the ones that are bringing this about, and somebody you wouldn't have expected is the one that is actually anchored in the darkness in that house?
Yeah, it's sweet and innocent. Yes,
and
that's how they act.
And it turns out that they're the ones that are bringing this down upon their family. Did you find that with the Perrone family? Was there somebody in there that was feeding this thing on purpose?
No, I couldn't say anything bad about the Perrone family at all. Nothing.
So they were just wrong people, wrong house, wrong time. It was just a bad bad move for them at that point in their life to deal with this. How long did they stay in that house before they had to call for help?
I don't really know. Right now, I'd have to go through the records to find out a time frame. But they weren't that long.
Okay, so they were in there. And then how long of a battle was it? Because as we've said, it's not just as simple as going in and throwing some holy water in the house and praying in Jesus' name and it's gone. How long of a battle did you and Ed have to deal with this family?
Oh, my God. I can't tell you how long we worked with them. I mean, we would get home, you know, we would get home from what we were doing, you know, whatever we would go to the house and do what we had to do and then go home. And then we just get called right back again, you know, and it used to be exhausting sometimes to us.
Oh, I bet.
Very exhausting.
But that was probably part of the goal, right? These things did not want to let up. They wanted to break you, and then you and Ed, so that you just maybe quit and leave and stop helping the family because it's just too much work.
Yes.
They didn't know what they were up against, did they?
No, they didn't.
They didn't realize Ed and Lorraine were not leaving this case until they were able to help the family. Once you did your work, did the family end up leaving that house and moving on and, you know, getting a sense of release, or was this thing, did it continue to bother the family after this home?
It continued for a period of time, but then they had no choice but to move out.
So there are some cases you just can't get the thing out of the place. And is that, how do you feel as an investigator and somebody who feels the calling to help? How do you feel when you know that you couldn't get it out, you couldn't effectively help the family in a way that they could stay in their home, and now they're gone, and you know that a whole new family is about to move in there and that they may be facing the same darkness? I mean, does that ever conquer you?
Oh, yes. Oh, God, it does. You just have to hope and pray that that family wouldn't be affected in the same way as the other family were. You have to hope and pray for that.
Right. Well, in the Amityville case, there's never been a family since the Lutz family that's had any complaint about what occurred there.
Oh, first of all, remember the first guy, the family that he killed.
Right, right. Well, that's what I'm saying, though. But since the Lutz family, there's really been no, you know, there's been no claims of the paranormal.
If they gave me $1 million,
uh-huh,
I wouldn't go in the house.
Really, even to this day, Amityville is a house that you would not want to return to?
No.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that says something, that even for a woman whose job it is to help. Now, if the family called upon you, though, and said...
Oh, if that case, yes.
Right, and but that, just to go revisit for old time's sake and memories, you have no interest in engaging in that.
No, old times. No.
Right.
No.
Now,
no.
You...
Not when it falls... You know, when it came right back to the house again that night.
Now, I know that you've got attached in your house, basically, you've got this museum of oddities, of haunted objects and things that you've taken from cases that were dark and creepy. There is a very dark, sinister piece of memorabilia from this case. Can you tell us a little bit about it and a little bit about the story?
No. I don't even want to talk about it. You mean about what's out in the museum?
Right, from that you had to take, because isn't there a doll that you have from this case, from The Conjuring, that you had to get out of that home?
Mm-hmm.
And can you talk to us at all about that and what that is, or is that
I don't want to give that any more recognition than I have to. You know, on my property, I have a Catholic priest that lives here. He's retired. In that museum, I'd say 3 or 4 times a week and doing blessings. So I don't want to do anything that is going to start something up.
And that's important, isn't it? I mean, when you've got this, don't keep poking the fire, because if you keep
poking it,
what's going to bring it back to you.
Exactly.
Are you ever blown away by the fact, Lorraine, that there are people that deal with dark entities and dark houses and have these horrific accounts, and then after they get it cleaned up and their life is back in order, that they do go back and start poking those embers again, that they find like maybe their life isn't as meaningful without having this attachment?
I've seen that happen.
Why do you think that is? Is it just because they had the attention of people during that case and now without it, there's nothing? Or do you think that they go back to it, revisit it, like, did this really happen?
Did this really happen?
Okay, yeah. So it's more of that, and then they just start poking that case and it reinvigorates? I mean, does that ever happen?
In other words, maybe, just maybe, maybe I was too young to understand this or something like that. Making excuses.
Right. Right. And so as you get these pieces for your museum, I mean, is your museum open? I mean, are people allowed to visit and see what you have in there, or do you keep it?
Only by appointment.
Only by appointment.
My son-in-law does it. I don't go out in the museum at all.
Does it ever unnerve you to let people in there, knowing that, especially if you've got that many items, and I've seen photographs, I think you were in Entertainment Weekly, and there was photographs of all the things around you there. Mm-hmm. Is there a concern that because you have like this mecca of a location filled with such powerful energy and so many different things that something might end up following home one of your visitors?
Well, my son-in-law does the tours. He explains everything to them. You know, make sure that they, you know, have the faith to go in there. It doesn't matter what your faith is, but that you have protection, and that's how it's done.
And it's just...
And we never allow children.
Never allow children. Well, okay, that's good. So what age group do you allow people to start coming? Do they have to be 21 and over in order to even get in there?
About that, yes. Yes.
And what, and without giving us the backstory in that, when we come back from our break, I'm just curious, in your museum, I'd like to know about how many different pieces you think you have in there, and what was one of the weirdest things that you just were totally blown away that it had an attachment to? We're going to take our final break of the evening. We'll come back. We'll talk with the one and only Lorraine Warren. Go check out the movie. It opens up tomorrow, kids. It's called The Conjuring. It's in theaters July 19th. We'll be back with more Darkness Radio right after this. Good evening. Welcome back to the show. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. We are here 5 nights a week exploring the strange, an unusual world around us. And before there was Amityville, there was Harrisville. Based on the true story, The Conjuring, the brand new movie is out tomorrow. It tells the real terrifying tale of how world-renowned paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren were called to help a family that was being terrorized by a dark presence in their secluded farmhouse. This, as you heard in the last segment Lorraine say, is one of the most powerful cases that they've ever had to work on. And we were talking about your museum and the oddities that you've brought in there. About how many pieces do you think you have overall from the many years you've done the cases?
You know, I really can't even. I would say over 100.
All right, so you've got quite a bit of items out there.
More than that.
And what was the strangest thing that you found that there was an attachment to? I mean, was there, I don't understand dolls and maybe some jewelry or personal effects like that, but was there ever something strange like an anchor or, a toilet plunger, and you're just, really, this is the cause? I mean, was there anything really just strange for you like that?
I haven't been out in the museum now for quite a while, but the things that are there have been the source of hauntings in people's homes, and I can't even tell you how that, like, there's a whole big lion skin out there, and that was from Africa, and then there's a collection of this kind of memorabilia stuff that the state cop had given Ed. And, it was terrible, the kind of stuff that happened. And that cop died as a result of this.
Wow, that's powerful. And for those of you interested, too, the Warrens do have a website, believe it or not, warrens.net. That's warrens.net. Warrens.net. You can find information there about their cases, about their occult museum, videography, their biographies, just anything and everything is there to be told. interesting stuff. So you've got to check it out. Now, you got involved also with the TV show Paranormal State, and you were going along with the college kids and helping mm-hmm. them in these cases. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, I mean, certainly everybody remembers the case where you had to give Chip Coffee a good slap to get him out of what was starting to take him over.
Well, oh my God. I'm ashamed of doing that, but that's the only way I could get. I couldn't get him out. He went into some kind of a state that he just couldn't get himself out of. And I slapped him hard.
Yeah, certainly I remember that case. I had nothing to be ashamed about. I'm sure that he would have rather done that 5 seconds of pain of getting a sharp awakening crack than have something end up possessing him and dealing with this case. Are you unnerved with the amount of young people that are getting involved in the paranormal field and choosing to follow, you know, in the steps of Ryan and Sergi and, you know, the Ghost Hunters TV show and Ghost Adventures? I mean, is it a concern for you, or do you think it's good that more and more people are taking up the mantle to try to bring help to others?
I don't want to see it in a negative light.
Right.
You know, I mean, especially among, you know, kids that are educated and all. So I don't really, I want to ask Father. Father put something down here for me to tell you. Father, what is this that you put down here?
The tiger is from India.
The tiger skin is from a case in India. Okay.
Yes.
Boy, you have been all over the world, haven't you? England and China and Japan and India, Africa, all of these cases. Yes. I mean,
all over.
Has there ever been a case that you said no to, Lorraine?
No.
Every case that somebody's needed you, you've made yourself available.
It's not me. I put myself in God's hands.
Right.
So, and I know I'll get my protection.
You know, you talk about the fact that the religion is a big part of it, and you've got a priest on hand there that lives with you to help with these things. And why do you think?
With me.
Well, no, but I mean, he's on site there to help out. But I mean, more along the lines of why do you think that religion, in general, doesn't seem as prepared to deal with this type of phenomena, even though there seems to be an increase on it. Why do you think religion is not taking more of a serious stance with possessions and these dark kind of hauntings? Why do they have to go to Ed and Lorraine Warren for help? And why aren't churches?
Why don't you ask some Catholic priests that?
Well, I was curious. I mean, you've talked to so many, and it's got to be frustrating for, you know, Father Malachi Martin and others that do take up that mantle. It's got to be frustrating to them that more people did not involve themselves to try to bring help.
Exactly. I mean, it's not investigating, it's finding help.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
It's getting the help out there because, you know, I asked you if there was ever a case you turned away. And we hear cases constantly where people come to me, you know, I mean, we're radio hosts and they send me emails saying, Dave, this is what's going on. And we've had a priest in here. He came in once, didn't like it, and will not come back to help us. And to me, that breaks my heart that, and I'm not picking on the Catholic religion at all, or that, you know, on those priests, because there's pastors and ministers and priests from every religion that have done this. They get in and feel like they're in over their head and they move out quickly. And then it has to fall in the hands of private investigators like yourself and your husband and John Zaffis and Ryan and people like that to come in and try to give some help and understanding to this. And you would think that the religious sect would be a lot more prepared for dealing with this than people like just Ed and Lorraine Warren.
I would think so too, honey.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
I would think so too.
What advice, we've only got a few minutes left here together, and I appreciate so much of the time you've given us. What hints or tips would you like to give the people in the field right now that are interested in dealing and helping with others? You know, there's so many people that want to deal in the realm of demonology and occultism and try to help. What suggestions would you give to those people that really want to make a difference?
If they really want to make a difference, they have to realize it isn't them that's doing it. They have to have the faith to ask God to be willing to do it. Not them. You can't. If I was 6'10" and weigh 400 pounds, I couldn't go in that's any place to do anything like that. Or if I had guns and you couldn't, right. couldn't kill people to get rid of it.
So it's not so much the what's the word I'm looking for? It's not just the want and desire. You have to have the religious calling to make this happen.
You have to have faith.
Faith.
You have to have faith. You know, if you want to really be involved in doing it, it doesn't matter what your faith is, but you have to have faith if you want to go in and help people, because you can't do it.
Right. You need to have some kind of higher energy backing you when you go in to deal with this thing, and realize that
exactly.
you've got to remove your ego. It's not about you saving the family.
It's not about you.
It's about God working through you to help this family and get that taken care of.
Exactly right.
Or whatever religious sect that they believe in. And I've always respected that about you, though you were Irish Catholic and believed in that. When you went to help families, you didn't just force Irish Catholic on them, and it wasn't your way or no way. You worked with many different religions around the world to help rid these people of these horrific afflictions of darkness.
People are all the same.
Mm-hmm.
They're all the same. That we speak different languages, we look different, but they're all the same. It's beautiful.
And getting,
you have to understand it.
How much mop-up do you have to do on these paranormal teams that are out there running around waving detectors and calling out ghosts, and then they leave and families are still left in trouble? Do you get a lot of calls from people that are like, man, they stirred something up, Lorraine, and I can't get it controlled now?
Yes.
So
we're trying.
So for the paranormal investigators out there, what warning do you have, or what bit of advice do you have to them to make sure that they don't leave a house worse than they found it when they go in to help a family?
Oh, please don't do that. Please don't you go in and think that you yourself can get rid of something that might be demonic. You can't. You don't have the power to do it, and you have to have the faith before you even try to do it.
We've got like about a minute and a half left, and this is going to be kind of a weird question. But in that fact, so many people now, they hear, you know, a mouse in the wall, they're sure they have a demon because they've watched shows like Paranormal State, or they've seen, you know, Ghost Adventures, or seen the Amityville Horror or the movie The Conjuring. And it automatically, like after the Amityville Horror movie came out, everybody thought their house was haunted. How many cases do you go to check out that people are concerned, or they had a goofy paranormal team come in and run out saying you've got demons, and you get there and there's no demons? It's just this team didn't know what they were talking about.
Yes. Well, you get that a lot, but I always interview people, you know, the husband, the wife, adult children in the house.
Have you been given the gift? Have you been given the gift of discernment, so when you're speaking to them, you can actually tell if there's something there?
Yes.
All right. So there is this gift that's also given to you. So while you're discussing this with them, you can tell if it's real or just a perceived attention grabbing or misunderstanding what's going on.
Exactly.
And do you help families that just have ghosts, even though they're not demonic or dark, or do you just try to stick with the darker cases?
Then you can go in and command in the name of God for them to leave and go back to where they came from.
There's
nothing that's going to harm them.
Well, Lorraine, it's been a pleasure. 8 years spending time with us on Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I hope we have another 80 years with you and can continue to have you share your wealth of knowledge with us. Thank you so much for coming on, and I wish the movie a lot of success, and I hope it brings a lot more attention to you and the great work that your husband did in this field.
Thank you, my dear.
Thank you, Lorraine. Take care, and go check out the website of Ed and Lorraine Warren. It's warrens.net.
Thank you very much for tuning in today and spending some time with Tim and I in Memory Lane as we share one of our last favorite interviews with Lorraine Warren. It's bittersweet that we have to say goodbye, but we thank her for the years of friendship and work that she did in the paranormal field to keep it elevated and in the forefront. And no matter what you may say about the legend of the Warrens, they were entertaining, they were educating, and they were enlightening. And that's what we've always strived to be on this program. Thank you for tuning in. And in honor of Lorraine, make sure that you reach out to somebody today. Give a hug, give a phone call. It's Easter Sunday. It's a good time to try to mend fences and tell somebody that you love them. Let them know that you're thinking about them, because there is no promise of a tomorrow. So make the best of today. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. Happy Easter to all of our listeners around the world. And thank you for tuning in and being a part of ours. We'll see you again next weekend, right here on Beyond the Darkness.